I'm going to hand over to Savannah very shortly, but you will have noticed that sandwiched between our two beautiful ladies, we have our first ever men in the room. So be kind to them, be gentle, but after each of our panelists has given us a little bit of a talk through what they do, the exciting stuff they're doing, and a little bit of a demonstration, we will have questions and answers, and please do speak up. Sue will roam around with a mic. So, yes, please be vocal. But I'm going to hand over to Savannah.
Hi, so I'm Savannah DeSavory. I am the founder of Industry Hub. So the idea is, imagine if you could walk down the street and instantly discover who is behind the projects that you admire. So currently, as you all know as professionals, if you want to know who is the facade engineer behind a specific project, or the interior designers who've worked with the type of tenant that you want to attract to your building, you have to hope that someone in your personal network knows the answer. And as the consultants, which I'm sure many of you are, you know that networks are key. It can take years, if not decades, to build the type of network that can identify who is behind everything. And I'm not just talking, you know, who's behind the cheese grater, but who's behind that innovative exterior lighting you saw on a building on Bond Street. Or who's behind that structural facade that you really liked seeing and you would have no idea. So the idea of Industry Hub is that network that takes decades should be available with the click of a button. How we go about doing that is firstly through showcasing. So consultants, and by that I mean everyone from architects and interior designers to planning consultants and surveyors, can showcase their projects, their collaborations with other companies, and their endorsements by past clients. Developers and fund managers can also showcase their work if they're looking to attract investors or joint venture partners. The reason we allow everyone to do this, and for most companies it's free, we have a few very big companies, and that number's growing, who are paying to have tailored profiles for each of their verticals. Because for them, everyone knows, so for example, CBRE, everyone knows who they are, but apparently they're always surprised by just how many specialties they have and how many projects they're behind, not just the big ones that make the headlines. But for most companies, it's free to be on here because the data they provide for free marketing, we in turn use to power our discovery tool. So firstly, you're able to find a consultant by their new specialties, the project type they've done. If you type in retail, only companies that have put up a retail project in their portfolio come up. Big difference between your corner shop and your luxury high-end retail store. And also clients. So out of curiosity, the other day, I was just playing around with it because we're in beta now with, I think, nearly half of the AJ100 architectural firms now, and I put in Peabody Trust, and sort of 8-10 of the top architectural firms came up with their project they'd done for them, which is an interesting side of things, of being able to see who your peers have worked with, or like I said, the tenants that you want to attract. So this is one way you can look for consultants. The other way is also being able to browse projects and find inspiration. So some of the developers we've been speaking with, for example, Mike Slade at Helical Bar said, we've used the same consultants for decades. You know, that side of innovation isn't something we focus on. But my God, do we waste a lot of time trying to find precedent for our new projects. So the idea here is that instead of having an internal precedent library, every time someone uploads a project, it's new inspiration and ideas, which you can filter and tailor to exactly what you're doing of your own project. However, the most exciting part... and this is very early stage design, but is because everyone, when they upload a project, we geotag it, you'll be able to walk down the street and by simply taking a picture, typing in the address, using basic AR, you'll be able to know who's behind that building. And you'll be able to sit in a hotel lobby and say, who did that? Who did the flooring? Who did the facade? Who did that feature wall? You'll be able to know exactly at the time you're sitting there. Or you could be in a hotel in Hong Kong looking on your laptop and you'll also be able to know. So final part is then collaboration. With all this data we're collecting, it's more than just a search tool. You can also then save it to private notebooks and, more importantly, work with your clients. So when I came up with this idea, I was a developer in New York and we had a big hot tech tenant who wanted to create this amazing stadium seating, connecting all of their floors and all these amazing ideas they made Pinterest boards for. I don't know if any of you have ever tried to use Pinterest for a commercial project. It was the biggest headache I'd ever had, trying to figure out if these were real, were they CGI, could it even be done? So the idea here is that it's never just a pretty picture. You will always know who's behind it, whether it's a small, innovative company or if it's one of the big architects. And that pretty much is it, in short.
our first ever man. No pressure.
Hi, everyone. I've got a quick question for you. How many of you have ever used Just Park to park your car before? Okay, just the guys from Just Park. That's good. So, how many of you ever heard of Just Park before? Okay, a few of you. But I bet none of you have ever recommended us to any of your clients or for your own firms to manage the parking assets outside your property. And over the last 2-3 months, this is the industry and opportunity which we've kind of catapulted ourselves into. Now, the question I've been asking myself is, like, who is the largest parking operator? You know, if I asked you guys, you'd probably say NCP, maybe Q-Park, APCOA, Eurocarparks. They're the big brands and names that everyone knows. And you'd be right, maybe, if you talked about revenue or brand awareness. And yeah, here's an example. APCOA's got 150,000 spaces. Actually, Just Park has over 200,000 spaces around the country. And these spaces could be on someone's driveway. We allow homeowners to rent out the space in front of their house. It could be in a church, in a school. We also work with major hotels and car park operators. For us, it's about making use of all the underutilized space that lie on people's property. And if we also look at the number of locations, you look at NCP, they've got about 400 to 500 car parks in the UK. Euro car parks, about 800. We have over 25,000 locations around the country that helps drivers find the most convenient spot close to where they're going. We've got over 1 million customers who are using Just Park to find affordable and convenient parking, and over 98% of all the people who use us have a very positive experience. And people often ask me, sort of, what's a sort of one-liner that sort of sums up our business? And I came up with this, and you know, when I was 18 years old going to university, I didn't think I would start a company where that would be the slogan. But it is very true. You know, from the empty driveway in front of someone's property to a multi-story car park, time and time again, with any partner we work with, we are increasing the revenue and we're providing a much better customer experience to those who are arriving. And we do that by ultimately using technology in a more efficient way, but also through data and understanding who is at your car park, how long are they staying, what is the repeat usage. And yes, that may, you know, if you're a parking operator, that makes sense. But if you are a shopping center, how much value is there in actually understanding who is parking, how long they're staying? You know, is there other revenue streams when you know that car is parked there? And that is very much what we're opening up and offering to the property sector. There are parking assets attached to most properties a lot of the time, even on weekends. Imagine a commercial Nabarro, if they've got underground car parking spaces. On weekends, they could be making an absolute killing, tons of revenue. And evenings, weekends, we're just unlocking the potential of all this underutilized space. And I want to show you an example of how we do things in a smart way. I don't want to go into detail about all the benefits of Just Park and do a big sales pitch. I don't think it's appropriate for now, but by all means, if you're interested, please get in touch. But I do want to touch upon one way we approach the parking problem, which I'm sure you've all experienced. So I know I asked you who's used Just Park before. I think this is a slightly easier question, which I know the answer to. But how many of you have received a parking ticket before? Okay, more like it. How many of you received a parking ticket because you either forgot to pay or you just couldn't read the instructions? Okay. How many of you purposely didn't pay? Right, no one. So the way we approach, this is what enforcement normally leads to. Potentially some guy like that showing up at your house trying to take your TV, and then maybe you'll end up in court with a CCJ, or you'll pay a £120 fine. But the way we approach things at Just Park is very different to how most of the incumbents do. And this was an article that was in the Daily Mail, I think, last week. And this is not, you know, if you're a big shopping centre and people who are coming to your store are getting a £40 fine, £80 fine, or potentially even losing a house, how does this reflect on your brand? And, you know, we work with major hotel groups, including Hilton. If Hilton did this to one of their customers, the management at Hilton would be furious. It reflects extremely badly on their brand. for, what, £40 revenue, which probably they only need to keep a small slug of. We approach parking in a very different way and enforcement in a very different way. We have a very data-driven approach to it. So we do not penalise people for making mistakes. If someone is parking at a car park and forgets, because they've used an app to pay for it, we'll send them a push notification saying, Anthony, look, you've forgotten to pay. Click here to pay for your parking. If they do it a second time, maybe we charge them a £2 administration fee or something similar. But we don't penalise people for making mistakes. If you repeatedly make a mistake, yes, absolutely, you'll get a PCN for the post and pay £40. And we'll be able to track that user's behaviour across all the different parking spaces we control. So yes, if you've made 5 mistakes, but you've parked 100 times successfully, we're still not going to penalise you. We're there to ultimately, parking should be a utility. It shouldn't be the first topic of conversation when you arrive at a destination, and definitely not the first thing you moan about. And so I guess the thing I want you to leave with is very much, when was the last time you talked positively about a parking brand? Now, I'm sure that it's very rare that anyone talks positively about parking. But what I'd like you to think about is, well, that doesn't have to be the case. Just Park is very much positioning itself as the loved parking brand. We want to work with to everyone. We want to improve the industry, disrupt it, and ultimately remove any parking topic from conversation when you arrive at a dinner party or an event like this.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, good.
Indeed.
My name is Chulam. I'm the founder of Placemake.io. We are an AI startup. We use AI, machine learning, and massive amounts of data to solve challenging location problems. I should say that I'm a mathematician, and I am not a property person, which means that I tend to see the industry through the eyes of a mathematician. And what I'll show you will probably be very different from what you're used to seeing. That's my guess. Let's think about some of the fundamental questions that people might have in the industry. What are the nature and dynamics of a particular location? What is a good location? How can you tell location is good? Which areas are undervalued or up and coming? What's the optimal location for a physical asset, say a new store? These are very challenging questions. But now think about some of the standard solutions. You might drive around, you might scout, you might pay an intermediary or service provider, you might manually compile a comps database. These are what I call suboptimal solutions. What's the problem? The problem is that identifying and assessing locations is, at least the process right now, is very inefficient. It's very costly, it's very fragmented, it's very long, it takes a very long time. Also, there is a ton of information out there, but it is not being used at all. 80% of data have a location component, but most of the information is just being overlooked or discarded. What do we do? As I said, we use AI and machine learning and massive amounts of data to solve exactly these types of questions. I can tell you what the optimal location is for your new coffee shop. I can tell you what the next shortage is for the next purchase is, using data and algorithms. Basically, this technology will essentially touch every aspect of the value chain, and from pre-acquisition to operations to post-operations, sale, basically. We'll be able to streamline all of this, use data, we'll be able to replace a lot of the internal tools that are currently being used, and you'll have a standardized process and streamlined workflow. The idea, essentially, is first to build something more like a Bloomberg terminal, but for real estate and location industries. But the long-term goal is to build something far more expansive. You can think of it as a location stack, as described here. You can think of it as a location as a fundamental layer, data on top, machine learning, AI, analytics on top of that, and then finally a development environment, so APIs, SDKs, tools, and so on. What you have an entire ecosystem or infrastructure devoted to locations. You can think of it as AWS, Amazon Web Services for location, something that you can build on top of. This is our plan, essentially, to expand and then take over the world. But instead of telling you about how technology will change the industry, I'm just going to show you. Here is a prototype of our product. this is an we have a page for Petra. Okay, this is it's an enterprise B2B SaaS platform and that anyone can use. We have an intelligent map on top with data layers that can go through. Then we have extra information on the bottom. Here we are aggregating millions of data points down to these 20 or so high-level dimensions. This basically tells you everything that you need to know about this particular neighborhood. Makes for very easy comparisons. You can drill down into these different dimensions, see what the key drivers are behind the component scores. You can pick out a few of these and get the neighborhoods that match your criteria, and so on. We are pulling massive amounts of traditional signals and non-traditional signals. Traditional signals are the ones that people in the industry tend to know about already and use, for example, LandRedge, ONS, OS, TFL, information. But we include also non-traditional signals that are very, very powerful and yet not being used at all. For example, social media data, search trends, sharing economy data. We are looking to include now some ATM data, mobile data, credit card data, and sensor data. These all then go into the algos running under the hood. So, for example, we take a look here. These are comps. We use an algorithm, a clustering algorithm, to generate these comps. These are all the neighborhoods that are comparable to Peckham. So, for example, say you're heavily invested in Peckham, you're looking for an area with a similar profile, similar characteristics, you can use this and figure out exactly where you need to go. Or suppose you have a portfolio that you're trying to benchmark or optimize, looking for a good hedging opportunity, you can use this to figure out what would be complementary. We then define different proprietary indices on top. So for example, this market value index. You can think of this as a price distribution on top of this cluster that we just picked out. And you can see that Croydon down here is way undervalued, whereas Caledonian is way overvalued. Similarly, you can take a look at the growth index here that we defined. You can see that Croydon is growing far more quickly than, say, Caledonian. So in terms of investment potential, Croydon is far more interesting than Caledonian. Croydon is undervalued, but growing really fast. Caledonian is just the opposite. Something that we're building right now is a generalization of this. It's a spatial temporal clustering algorithm. You can think of it as clustering across the geography and time. That will allow us to say, for example, that Peckham in 2015 is comparable to, say, Shoreditch in 2009. Then you can see what the key drivers are behind neighborhood change. You can project forward and you can predict what the next shortage is going to be for the next purchase. Here is another example, probably more for retail. We met with the co-founder of Cafe Nero. Our algos were able to reverse engineer the site selection strategies of Nero and Starbucks with no input from them, using just data. He said that we got it exactly right, so that was good validation. This is a more sophisticated example. Here we pulled social media data and used natural language processing essentially to figure out what the tweets were about in these posts. And here we have people writing about coffee, really wanting coffee, and so on. What's interesting is that you can then overlay locations of different coffee shops. You can see what the relationships are like, what the clusters are like. You can see what the competition is like, but most importantly, you can identify, for example, over here, very interesting coffee deserts. These are areas where people are writing about coffee and really wanting coffee, but there are no coffee shops. You can think of it as a deficit map or an opportunity map. Coffee demand minus coffee supply. It tells you exactly where you need to go. No one is doing anything like this. Here's another interesting example. I'll show you. Anomalous pricing. We used an anomaly detection algorithm to identify these properties. These are all properties that are sold at a very steep discount. You can think of them as undervalued properties. What's interesting, first of all, is that you can identify areas where there may be clusters that might tell you something about the neighborhood, maybe something about the market in that particular Right now we're looking at LandRedge data, and these are properties that have already been sold, but we will be able to use the same algorithm to study properties on the market. So we could pull Zoopla and Redmoon data, for example, and tell you which properties are undervalued, maybe interesting investment opportunities. We do the same on the commercial side once we get the data, and can tell you which commercial properties are undervalued and where and why exactly. You could run the same analysis and look at overvalued properties, and that might tell you something about money laundering, but The idea is to develop an abstraction layer on top so that we would not have to hard code any of these types of analyses. So for example, we'll be able to do something like, say you're a user and you're interested in coffee. You have to do something like that. Get all the different coffee shops, get coffee-related data overlays, and then coffee-related analyses and so on. I'll go through one more example. Let's take a look at this one. Here we have a leading indicator of housing prices. We have this index that we defined using search data, social media data, and so on. And you can track this index, you can track the inflection points. When the index goes down, housing prices go down shortly afterward. When the index goes up, housing prices go up shortly afterward. You can use it to predict essentially how the market will move. You can see, for example, if people are Googling a lot for Peckham, I mean, that tells you something about the interest in the area. You can correlate that with other data sets, for example, Google AdWords, historical statistics. You can see, for example, if there's been an acceleration in the price of particular ads. If advertisers are taking out a lot of ads using the specific keywords, for example, that tells you something about the market. This is just an example of some of the data mining that we do. We do engage a lot in feature engineering. We have data sets, and then we mine the data sets. We create data out of data. So for example, we might have a listing of different businesses. We can use something like entropy as a measure of heterogeneity, get a sense of what the mix of establishments is in a particular neighborhood, and then you can use that to tell you something about what will happen in the neighborhood, what's the best place to put a coffee shop, for example, and so on. These are just some of the features that we have in this platform. We're building it out, trying to get more feedback on what would be most relevant. The idea is to get this into everyone's hands, into every organization, and have this be the standard tool for any location question. To wrap up, data and tech will be the industry.
I'm not quite sure how to go on from that. I'm pretty close to
Brilliant. Hi. Well, hello everyone. My name is Henry, and I'm here from Patreon today. How does this thing work? Like that? Okay, perfect. So, just to give you a bit of a background about PaveGen and what we do, can I have a quick show of hands? Who's heard of PaveGen before? Okay, so a couple of you. Okay, brilliant. So, essentially, PaveGen is a flooring tile, so a flooring system. It's a smart flooring system that will convert your footstep, the kinetic energy that your footstep produces, into both energy and data. Now, this might seem slightly weird at the start, but that energy we're using first and foremost to power street lighting. That's the main application when Lawrence Kimball Cook, our founder and CEO, conceptualized the idea back in 2008-2009. He was working for an energy company, E.ON, and was tasked with the challenge of finding renewable energy solutions within the built environment. He looked first towards solar and found that due to overshadowing and lack of space available, it was a very difficult solution to come up with. Equally, wind was very difficult to harvest. The next billion people to be born into the planet are going to be living in the urban in cities and towns within the built environment, and he thought there was no better way than to utilise that as a form of energy than by looking right below his feet and trying to harvest their own personal energy. We have what we're trying to do is connect both the digital world, the physical world, and the human world, and we're doing this by what we call the Internet of Beings. a lot of you are aware, I'm sure, of the Internet of Things and how we have devices talking to each other. First it was kind of, you know, B2C, C2C, and now we're also looking at the way in which, you know, in the future your fridge is going to be telling you, before you know it, when you're going to run out of chilies and that you have a dinner party coming up and that you should probably go to the store and order that. Or actually, better than that, it will order them for you and then all you have to do is pick it up. And then actually further than that, as we've talked about drones, it will probably just end up in your fridge before you even realise you're out of chilies. So what we're trying to do at PaveGen is we're fitting into every single element of the built environment, especially within property technology, which we see as like a huge growth area. We're fitting into not only the sustainable element of it by creating energy as you walk across the tiles. It's an innovative and engaging renewable technology. You know, you don't find people hugging solar panels. You can't play with a wind turbine. Whereas when we found that here with this example, if it plays, this installation was carried out at Lawrence's school, one of the first permanent installations we did. And we found that children were immediately interested and curious about what was going on, how was the light being generated, and, you know, what was that capable of doing. From that research, we developed PaveGen Live, which works very closely with brands and agencies to deliver temporary solutions for product launches, marketing campaigns. For example, we toured with Sunglasses Hut across the States with an LED dance floor. We've helped Adidas launch numerous pairs of shoes in the past. We've worked closely with H&M, Uniqlo, various retailers, looking for in-store engaging kind of methods to improve the customer's experience. The second solution that we offer is PaveGen Systems, and that is looking at the permanent installations and the way in which PaveGen can be further integrated into the built environment. Now, in that area, we are looking at exploring high footfall locations such as shopping centres, train stations, airports, stadiums, and just to see the ways in which utilising the power of people can offset not only energy and carbon footprints, but also find an alternative method of engagement. We're exploring options through the digital out of home advertising market, which is also a very, it's not caught up with the digital world at the moment. And we are trying to find new ways in which we can engage with consumers directly. There we are. So it's PaveGen and PaveGen Live. One of our most well-known installations that we've done to date was with Shell in a favela in Rio, where we installed our tiles underneath a football pitch, and in conjunction with solar, we were able to power the floodlights on the football pitch. This not only created a kind of a safe place for people to play at night, brought the community together. It equally kind of engaged and directly increased the locals' happiness and kind of levels of personal satisfaction, and all doing that through the power of sports and through education as well is a pretty unique thing. We've gone on to do a second football pitch with them in Lagos, and there are various other projects that we're working on at the moment. It's just a short video that will detail. If it's there, there we go. Oh, does it work?
Go back to the board again.
Go back.
Eu gosto.
It might be because it's from a Mac, actually. That's embarrassing. So we can have the still. But, I mean, it's fine. We'll just give this one a miss. That was a slight technical fault from before. But where we are now and what we're looking at, we've just shipped over our generators and our tiles, which I've got on the floor over to the right, so I can give you a demonstration in just a moment. And they're going to be installed at DuPont Circle with ZGF. And that is part of one of our first three pilot schemes that we're really looking at and one of our first installations. The next one that we are going for and that we're kind of working and finalising towards is on Bird Street, just off Oxford Street, 200 generators. Bird Street is going to try and become one of the cleanest green tech streets in London. And we are going to try and help them reach that target. And finally, the one that I'm most interested in, personally, is with Westfield in Stratford at the main entrance, where we're going to have our tiles installed, looking at kind of data analytics of how many people are entering the store, how many people are leaving. And I think it would be most beneficial having it at each entrance so that you can understand where people are coming in the most and which entrances and exits are being used. One thing that it is quite important to stress about, you know, why do you need PaveGen to do that, basically? Not only, you know, you can use iBeacons and much more efficient tracking devices out there. However, the important thing to remember about what we do is we aren't just a wayfinding solution. You know, we're not just a renewable energy solution. We're not just an engaging method with consumers. You know, we fill all of those circles and all of those kind of problems. And once you can look past kind of just speaking to the one person in the room that is solely interested in wayfinding, and you look at the entire solution and the entire PaveGen package, then you're able to experience and to see kind of the innovative kind of engaging methods that it is able to provide you with. Any questions? And I'm sure I'll have some in a second.
Just to show you how it works and what we're doing. So I don't know if any of you can see it around that, but basically we have a triangular tile. This is very simple, very straightforward, you can just pick it up. But the technology is held within the generators. And as pedestrians would walk over it, this is just a demo kit, but you can build this up into any sized array. And so it's very simple. As you tread onto the tile, you're going to generate electricity, which you then in turn use the for street lights and for lighting solutions, but obviously that comes with data analytics and looking into various kind of like digital currencies as well, which I can go into more detail of. This was our technology that we launched in May of this year, and we're really excited about what the features are going to hold for it.
So, my presentation today is not about a product. What we do, I'm the global chief executive Informed Solutions, and what we do is we're actually digital transformation experts. So we work at the moment with some of the largest government departments, like the Department of Environment and Climate Change and Regulatory Function. And we work globally with oil and gas majors to help them reimagine their operating models. And we work in the nuclear industry as well with the built environments. All of it's in the built environments. We are not currently working in construction in the UK. But we do work with these organisations to help them be digital organisations within built environments, particularly operationally. And it's about bringing together strategy, about bringing together technology, culture, and culture change, such as risk aversion and embracing learning, new skills in order to build this, and leadership. Now, we've got a lot of fascinating new technologies out there, but they need to come together to develop some of the bigger ambitions that we've got. And today what I want to talk about is how we can harness this innovation and how we can become in the UK a world leader in implementing it, not just in inventing it and then exporting it prematurely, which is where we don't actually get the economic benefit. So I want to talk to you about smart cities, and if you want to be slightly less ambitious to begin, smart buildings. Smart cities offer an unprecedented opportunity for the UK's construction sector. By 2020, global smart cities market is going to be valued in excess of £1 trillion. And that's what Forbes actually values it at. The market will have tripled in size in 7 years by 2020. The UK market alone has a potential of £30 billion, and that's actually published by BIS. There are over 9.7 billion connected things in global smart cities, and that's published by Gartner. And 81% of those connected objects are actually going to be in the built environment, and that again is Gartner. So how do we realise that challenge? Okay, at the moment we are lagging desperately behind the US and Asia Pacific. Interestingly, they are not necessarily the innovators. The UK and Australia have a culture of innovation, but they also have a fear of implementing that culture and piloting it commercially. The coalition government in 2013 made a pledge to make Britain a global leader in smart cities, but to date the other markets have actually taken up the challenge more effectively than we have. The Department of Business, Innovation and Skills reported that UK SMEs have to actually go abroad, as evidenced by Henry's group, to actually deploy these pilot projects due to a reluctance on the part of local authorities, utilities and major construction players to actually deploy innovation and services into their projects. While other sectors, such as government, oil and gas and mining, have been compelled to do so by market forces and have now fully embraced it, and digital technology, and they've transformed their businesses. Construction is currently at risk of being left behind. So what does it take to actually have the convergence of the built environment and digital transformation? How do you actually converge innovative technology and innovative thinking to create that magic? It comes down to, at the heart of innovation, is the need to collaborate and the need to invest in new skills, modern skills, and in leadership that embraces learning, embraces innovation. We have to collaborate. Smart cities require numerous disciplines and specialists to share ideas, to come together, and to be prepared to work together. Universities, planners, architects, contractors, system integrators, vendors, network service providers, cybersecurity experts. Everyone needs to dance together. We have to be smart and fearless about exploring innovation, become early adopters and realise the reputational as well as the commercial opportunities that differentiating our organisation makes. Innovation and digital can deliver for the built environment in the UK what it is delivering for other market, leading markets in the world. We also have to ensure that we have the right skills. There's an industry-wide shortage of digital skills, and in particular, alarmingly few women enter the built environment and the tech sectors. However, a growing number of highly successful female role models are showing us the way, and they're also showing us that gender is no longer a defining characteristic of how to be successful in either the built environment or in digital leadership. Zaha Hadid is arguably the finest female architect of our time, and Martha Lane Fox is the undisputed digital leader of our time, and they are both women. I'd encourage and challenge the women in this room to pursue leadership roles in your sector and to drive the UK to the forefront of smart cities. Be a leader in either construction industry or the digital industries, or if you're really ambitious, go for both. Now that is cool.
Thank you. His brain hurts a bit. Thank you and very much. I think now's the time for us all to sort of get stuck in and ask some questions. I guess the first one for me, thank you, Sue, is when I got back from most of those presentations was I wondered, is it actually about tech? Or is it about data? Or can we not split the two? Because it felt like it was more about data than the actual physical tech, and that's the future of real estate. Maybe, Savannah, how would you respond to that?
I think it depends on the platform itself. I think, obviously, some of them are more technical than others. speaking for Industry Hub, it's really about harnessing the data and taking it online. So what we're doing isn't really disruptive. It's nothing new. We're just taking those word-of-mouth networks that have been around for decades and just democratizing it by scaling it for the digital age. And I think that's where property in particular has fallen behind, is because we're so scared of tech that we forget that we have all this data anyway. We're just not communicating and sharing it. But I mean, some of them obviously are quite brilliant and definitely have a lot of tech involved.
And I guess Henry Paveton started just as a tile to create energy, didn't it? And when did you get to the point of thinking actually the value is in the data that we can provide?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say it's probably when Lawrence was looking at building it as a business as well, and when you actually have to look at starting to turn it into kind of a profitable revenue generating business, because that's ultimately what everyone's trying to do. When it comes to renewable energies, it's very difficult to compete directly with just solar and just wind, and with the other methods, because they've been around for the last kind of 30, 40 years. They've had billions of pounds pumped into them for investment, and it's data is, you have to have an understanding of data, whether you need to find a way to collect that and to provide it back and feed it back and utilize it and use it in a methodical way. We happen to do that through hardware, which is a very unique thing to be doing at the moment. The platforms are there to analyze data, and it's all about collecting it and using it in the right way, just as Shlomo was showing us. But I think what we're really looking at is the way in which we can engage with people, especially through your smartphones. We're looking at the moment at we've partnered with a company in America called Tribal Planet, which is headed up by Jeff Martin. Now, Jeff Martin he worked at Apple and helped bring iTunes to the market, worked very closely with Steve Jobs, and they are looking at developing an app for us in which we can create a digital currency by kind of, that new form of data that people use every day, and it is there, but there's no way of kind of collecting it and collating it and utilizing it.
And Shlomo, you said there's data is everywhere and we're not utilizing it as much as we should. I assume in the real estate industry in particular that we've got so much out there, and why don't you think that the industry has picked up on that before and left this opportunity for you?
Lots of reasons. One, the industry is very, very old-fashioned, very resistant to change. There's no incentive to adopt any of these new methods. You have these incumbents, they're very entrenched. They're waiting for someone maybe to come in and then upend the industry, and then only then will they start to embrace data. Another reason is that there are just no good tools to manage or exploit the data. And we're building technologies that will make sense of the data. I mean, the data, that would just be one piece. Really what you need is an entire infrastructure to make sense of the data. You can think of data as the input, but you need some technology to get actual answers or insights.
Out there in the audience, how much, or how many of you have your businesses talk about data, talk about tech and the importance of it, or is, hearing from our panel, is that stuff all new to you? What do you get back from that? Thank you, Sue.
You hear me better now?
We can always hear you.
It seems to be on everyone's kind of the director's conferences. There's always a topic on it. Some years they focus on it solely. It seems to me that what the problem comes out is that, yes, everyone knows it's important. It's getting bigger every year. How do they interact with it? How do they make changes themselves? Because they're surveying background, it's like it's a foreign language. So I think that's the main. They know it's there, they're talking about it, but how do they use it? And how do they bring it in?
Maybe you can answer that with you're talking about the skills and that we need to learn. Is language part of that?
Well, I think that, it depends which end you grab. You can be data-centric viewpoint, or you can look at the types of decisions or the types of services that particular organisation, that's where the digital transformation comes in. So data actually needs to serve the function, the business function, or the customer. And so that's the viewpoint through which, if you look at it through that lens, it ceases to be like art. So data can be used for decision support, whether it's, is my service effective, is it compliant, how can I make a better decision about where to locate something. For example, in the industries that we work in, oil and gas, and we work globally in 50 countries with companies such as BP, BHP, Billiton, Shell, Maersk Oil, Exxon, it's about their global operating model, managing risk. To illustrate the point, they are digging or they are drilling or exploring for oil and gas in ever more dangerous in ever more dangerous geography because it's hard, there are less reserves and harder to find. So they're managing risk, that's worth something to them. And they also have downward market pressures because, of course, the price of oil and gas is per barrel has gone down. So they have to do that with fewer resources. Well, all of a sudden, they basically enshrine some of these algorithms and, you know, mathematical models into a digital platform, provide tools, which is the thing that you're talking about, and that completely releases their analysts from having to do it all manually. So all of a sudden, you're solving a big business problem and data becomes a sensible part of that solution. But if it's simply the circular argument of, I know data's valuable, I know there's a lot out there, but I'm not sure how to use it or access it, I don't think you'll get out of that downward spiral. It's got to go at the top level. What problem is it solving? What need is it fulfilling? And design the service around that, including data.
Anthony, how have you found it going into a market that's new to you? You're new to them. How are you sort of getting over the language barriers?
The property language barriers. So,
and the tech language.
I guess going quickly going to the data point, actually. It's also about what kind of data. So we've got data we generate ourselves as a business, but also the data that's generated that is just available via APIs that can be consumed by any business. So, you know, when we look at new locations, for example, where do people need to park? Well, as been touched on, there's so much data out there about consumer behaviour, be it ad, where people are searching on Google or AdWords or etc. You can find out exactly where the demand is, and we can mind maps, and then obviously our business development team can take that data and say, okay, well, there's much more demand in this location where we've got much less supply, and so that's where we'll concentrate on. And so we're able to mine loads of different data sources and build that intelligence. We also use our own data to work out pricing. So I talked about sort of IntelliView of management, and imagine we can track every single car that goes in and out of a car park over a course of a 6-month period. We know exactly how long they stay, and therefore we can work out the optimal pricing tariff. So instead of charging between 1 and 2 hours, £2.50, if you charge between 1 and 3 hours, £4, you're going to generate 10% more revenue. And we can do that by very easily just installing a camera, tracking cars coming in and out, building up a data set, which with potentially tens, hundreds, thousands, millions of rows in a short period of time. And we've done this, and it added maybe 10, 20% additional revenue to that operator just by building up that data set and analysing it. I think the important point here is so many people talk about data and gathering data, collecting data. Data just everywhere. But actually analysing it, providing insight, and actioning it, it isn't happening enough. And there's a lot of data overload, and people just don't know what to do with it. So that's how we use it.
I'm Luca Tetra, I'm Aruna Real Estate Partners. It's been a fascinating talk, all of you. Thank you very much. In our sector, we're in the student accommodation sector, and as operators of our assets, we find data and managing information that's coming in, especially via social media and other more informal means, has become really important in terms of setting up flexible rent price models. Because we found that when we dealt with operators who don't do that, they don't actually capitalize on what's being said about, say, for example, room 301 on floor 6 in a scheme. And we find we're able to tweak our pricing quite substantially now that we control our own operations and use that information very viably for ourselves. So we can, we have a day in a week when we'll have a certain offer on a room for the summer lets, or you know, that sort of that's the sort of level of flexibility we feel we have to have now in our pricing. So that's one that's a big element of how, you know, of our operations changing because of data. But I think in general, I think if we can use data to address the cyclicality of the real estate sector, that would be amazing. Because that is where I think we need to think about sort of the future and how we can overcome the cyclicality in the office sector or the warehousing sector or in any one of the sectors that we all deal with on a daily basis.
I think that gets us to the question, doesn't it, of, you know, exactly how important is tech and data to real estate, and, you know, what are the minimum things that we need to understand and should be doing with data, with tech, to make sure that we can manage those cycles, that we can asset manage our buildings properly, that we can spot those opportunities where we should be opening coffee shops because we all love coffee. You know, how important is it? Who wants to kick us off?
I think it's understand the problem. You know, start off going back to the smart cities, go to the problem statement. What problem are you solving? Because I don't think there's a market there if you're not solving the problem, whether it's the cyclical nature of the real estate or its sentiment analysis, you know, which is again used to, you know, through social media. Hard facts can tell you one thing, which is historic. Sentiment analysis can actually be a very live feed for what's happening right now. To illustrate the point, it's used a lot by policing. I can't go into a lot of detail, but you know, they can actually pick up where there are protests and things like that, and they can actually detect when things are starting to shift. So similarly, that sort of sentiment analysis can be used in the property and retail, student accommodation, all of those things, to stay ahead of the curve, rather than wait until there's a weight of evidence to tell you you've actually missed the boat.
Yeah. I think data and tech more widely is useful for so much more. People think data, they think we've got to sift through these huge mounds to find, you know, the coffee shop, and luckily there's, you know, incredible startups now doing that. But it could be, you know, sensors that are feeding data saying about your energy management system, and you know, you can save so much money. I think that's where it's important. I completely agree. There needs to be an end goal for someone to want to use it, and I think saving money. I mean, all the it's more than just data. You know, the presentation earlier and looking at 3D printing and what they're doing in other countries, you know, sort of like in the Middle East and Dubai, I think, I don't remember, I think it's maybe like a quarter of their houses they plan to 3D print by like in sort of 15, 20 years, which is amazing. I think the UK gets so scared of, you know, moving away from investing in just hard assets and property towards, I don't want to close it just in data because I think there's so many amazing things going on in tech, but these innovations that enable you to save money that they sort of lose track of in the long time. In the sort of, you know, long term, it can do that, even if right now it's quite hard to grasp just how it will. Mm. You've got to sort of
and
make that
safety is another one as well. Mm. I mean, if you've got to evacuate a building, you know, sensors, etc., they can really make a big difference if you're talking about very large tower blocks or hotels, or you know, they can actually guide people through to the right exits. They can do all sorts of things like that. But there's got to be an appetite for it. Mm.